Thank you, Elkin. It's a delight to stand here before you once again. Jenny and I were here last October, but I'm not going to assume you know who this fellow is. Some of you probably don't know me from a bar of soap. So I'll just mention that I'm a Churches of Christ minister in retirement for almost 12 months now. This time, last Sunday, we were in the tropical heat of Singapore, celebrating our 40th wedding anniversary. And the journey from tropical heat to chilly Perth has been quite a challenge. So we're a little bit croaky, but it's only in our throat. We haven't got that dreaded lurgy, so you're quite safe. Well, we're in Luke's Gospel. Luke is the Gospel for this year. But if you've been following the set readings over the last few months, you may be forgiven for forgetting, because it's largely been in John's Gospel. When we go into the high seasons of Easter and leading into Pentecost, inevitably the common lectionary goes into the very intimate reflections that John's Gospel offers. And we are renewed, we are reinvigorated in the depth of the relationship that we have with our Christ. And now, I think, I'm a bit out of kilter, but I think this is the first foray back into Luke's Gospel since the season of Easter and Pentecost. We are indeed living in the season of the Spirit. The wise owls who make up the church year call this ordinary time. Between now and Advent is ordinary time. And we think, what's ordinary about it? Well, I guess they would argue that ordinary is what is meant to be commonplace for Easter people. We are people of the Spirit, and it's ordinary for us to be living according to the length of the Spirit and the energy of the Spirit. So we come into Luke's Gospel now again in that spirit, knowing that we are people of the Spirit, with some word that the text from the passage of Luke will have for us this morning. I've been rather struck by the choice of songs this morning and how they coincide with the themes of Luke's Gospel. A lot of them had, I think there were two or three, that you almost could read Luke chapter 6 into them. That's Luke chapter 6 is Luke's version of the Sermon on the Mount. It's called the Sermon on the Plain in Luke. And We were actually singing the Luke text in several of those songs this morning. The last time I spoke on this text was about 3 years ago, and there were things that were current in the environment at that time and in what was happening around us. And I always like to come back to the text, mindful of what the zeitgeist out there is at the moment, what the feeling is. And I reflect that as we come to this incident where the centurion seeks healing from Jesus by proxy through the Jewish elders for his sick slave, that this is about 2 weeks ago when Tim Costello retired as World Vision Australia's executive director. And it almost coincided with the federal budget announcement of our lowest ever commitment in recent years to overseas aid. And as the charitable dollar has also weakened, Tim bowed out with a challenge that asks Australians to discern the difference between genuine compassion fatigue and basic human selfishness. He said, "My diagnosis is that the global ill winds turn us inwards. We think we are just going to look after ourselves. We're doing it tough. We don't need to be responsible for others." And you start to get an evaporation of empathy. So the question before us this morning might be, is out there, even within here, a spirit of meanness that is growing? In this season of the Spirit, following the celebration of Pentecost, is there something that I, a son or a daughter of the Spirit, can infuse into the daily life of my community? Indeed, are there some helpful signposts or markers in today's text about the military commander who seeks Jesus' help in restoring his bondservant, his slave, to good health? As a Roman, the centurion is part of the prevailing dominant power. He carries the trappings of his social status and his rank, including the household bondservant. The word that is used here indicates that this may have been an indentured slave or forever, or it may have only been a term, a bondservant, that this young man might have been bonded to pay a debt for a certain period of time. The slave, however, has achieved something like family status in this man's household, and this wasn't uncommon. We're told that the officer valued him highly, suggesting not just that he was economically advantageous, but there was a very strong, affective, emotional value. We are given a rare insight in Luke's Gospel into the intimate domestic affairs of a person who represents a foreign presence in an occupied territory. Imagine living as a Jewish person in a town with this oppressive foreign presence in your midst. We don't know if he was renting a house or whether he was living in the barracks, but somehow he was connected to the Jewish community. There had to be some relationship between the role that a centurion played in keeping the peace, in maintaining a force that kept the peace in an occupied territory, and the Jewish citizens who lived around. But the slave falls ill, and the centurion looks not to the barracks physician, but a Jewish rabbi for healing. Some sort of a connection between this man and the Jewish community in which he lives. And oddly, his advocates, the people who approach Jesus, are Jewish elders, those who might have every reason to reject his pleas for help. His supervisors are the oppressors, whereas the Jewish elders represent those who are oppressed. Traditional God talk in the synagogue might easily yield to the tempting thought that sickness in the centurion's household is Yahweh's judgment falling on the Gentile enemy that has dared intrude upon the holy ground of this land. The Romans were very much resented, and there were daily prayers in the temple and the synagogue, albeit under the breath, that they might be driven back into the sea. Yet these elders approached Jesus, pleading, beseeching is the word, the cause of the centurion, that his servant might be healed. Here is a spirit of generosity exhibited by the Jewish leaders. But there's also a spirit of generosity shown by the author of Luke's Gospel, which is written round about second or third generation, when the split between synagogue and church was becoming quite evident. Luke often highlights the conflict between the Jewish leadership and Jesus. In fact, right up until now, we have seen nothing but conflict between the leaders of the Sadducees and the Pharisees and those who have been challenging Jesus every time he makes a move. His own home synagogue had sought to reject him and to throw him off a cliff. This is the first time that we see some kind of rapport between the Jewish leadership and Jesus. And it seems that throughout Luke's gospel, the opposite is being focused on. But Luke's greater burden is the universality of the gospel and its capacity to embrace all peoples and the call to engage all Christ followers in mature service to this end. And so the Jewish leaders are portrayed as generous in their pleading on behalf of the foreign military commander. And the basis of their plea is a journey of reconciliation that has taken place between them and the centurion. He must have had some time in his placement there. He has valued their culture and their spiritual understanding. It seems that he has become a respecter of their worship of the God that had been revealed to them in mystery, wonder, and benevolence. Because the elders say to Jesus, He is worthy of having you do this for him, for he loves our people, and it is he who built our synagogue for us. The centurion has been exhibiting cultural intelligence. He remains deferential to the Jewish ways and customs, deigning not to approach Jesus himself and according him the revered status of rabbi. Knowing that it is unfitting and unclean for a Jew to enter a Gentile house, and upon learning that Jesus is approaching his quarters now as a result of the plea of the elders, he scrambles and sends a message through his own friends, probably not the elders at this time, but those who are around him, his Gentile companions, sending a message pleading that he respects the boundaries and that Jesus only has to say the word and his servant will be healed. So here too, on the part of this centurion, is a further expression of the spirit of generosity, accompanied by humility and a true understanding of authority. Now, we Aussies don't have much truck with authority. We find it hard to hear. We have the stories of the diggers in the First World War thumbing their nose at their British superiors and larrikinising in a way to resist top-down authority. We were on Changi Beach last Monday and we heard how the Changi POWs did the same thing in riling the Japanese masters. It's difficult to hear trust in the command structure of an empire being exalted as exemplary faith, as the centurion is exhibiting here. Scholar Warren Carter argues that in many places in the Gospels we have a mixture in regards to the Jewish response to the Roman Empire occupation, that we have a mixture of resistance, of conformity, of coexistence, and downright defiance to empire trappings and language. Sounds a bit like us, doesn't it? But let's get around it in recognising that true authority arises from that which is authentic. And I think people in my country have a true respect for that which is truly authentic. The centurion says that he gives orders and the men obey him. The centurion is only there because he takes orders from someone higher up. And he represents the order of the Roman Empire when he gives orders to his underlings. So it's not the centurion who's wielding the authority, it's the Roman Empire that's wielding the authority to those who respond to him. And he says, look, I just give the word, and they jump. Jesus, you give the word, I know my servant will be healed. The servant for whom I have great affection. Some have linked this back to Genesis 1, the speaking of the word and creation came into being, that there's an identification that the centurion is somehow recognizing that Jesus has this connection. He's understanding true authenticity and the authority that emerges from that which is authentic. As we ponder our society, I wonder, do we know where its true authority, its true authenticity is to be found? And I ask the question, does the spirit of generosity open pathways to lead to a better understanding of that which creates authentic community? Jesus' response is one of the most highly commending statements in the Gospels. Luke says Jesus was amazed and says to those around him, I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith. Jesus was amazed. Do you know where else you find the word amazed, particularly throughout Luke's Gospel? It's when people see the work that Jesus does. They are amazed. Now it's Jesus who is amazed. The miracle of note to which Luke is drawing our attention is not the healing of the slave. That's almost a footnote. They went home and found the slave in good health. The miracle of note to which Luke is pointing is the demeanor of the centurion that was enough to amaze a rabbi who by this time had seen it all. Last time I addressed this passage, AFL player Adam Goods was in the news, courageously standing for his culture against a racially divisive backlash. It's taken 3 years for his truth to be publicly accepted and recognised. He strikes me as one who seeks to bridge two cultures with integrity and generosity, just as the centurion. Similarly, there are those like Tim Costello who challenge our culture from within. Will the mean spirit that has clamped its icy claw around our country's warm and generous heart ever be released? Will we find again our authenticity as a generous, open-hearted community? As we engage Luke's call to mature life-giving service in the name of Christ, how can I contribute to such an awakening? Thank you, Elkin, for the story of Jane Goodall. Another cross-cultural exercise in generosity. Did you notice? And it was all done with bananas. The only limit to our answer to that question of how I can show generosity is our imagination. On Friday, I was contacted by Kim Hoon, a reporter for the ABC in Canberra. Jenny and I first met Kim when he was an infant in his parents' arms. His toddler brother, Tack, had his arms wrapped around his father's legs. They were the first refugees that we ever met and became closely involved with as they sought to put the trauma of fleeing persecution and a treacherous sea journey behind them. That was 40 years ago. Kim had just, on Friday, had just interviewed his parents on the radio, retelling the horrors of their 4 days at sea, and wanted to share the recording with us. And as we texted back and forth, we reminisced on what we had learned from each other in terms of respect and grace and initiative and resilience. The spirit of generosity has always been reciprocal in our engagement with this family over the years. We may recall our own stories where we have been able to share in reciprocal generosity and build community. This morning you welcomed Stephanie as a member, and a number of you came out here and surrounded her. She has shared her story with you. You have shared your story with her. That's reciprocal generosity. It's the seed that we can plant in pockets within our community, wherever we are, and allow that to grow. Just as the centurion did, where he was planted in that little Jewish community in Capernaum. So may the centurion of Luke chapter 7 be a beacon to us all as we seek to give continuing expression to our walk with the risen Christ in the Spirit. In this way, the events of these times, lamentable as they may be, become teachable moments that, under the embrace of the Spirit of Christ, lead us further along the path of conciliation and the healing of our nation. Well, this is where I'd normally end it and go into our hymn. I remember last time we had a Q&A session, so, if anyone wants to, throw back at this or challenge it or ask for something that wasn't explained properly or... Yes.
I was just interested in your reflections on your time as a Christian and a Christian leader. How do we engender generosity? I mean, we can look at it from our own perspective, and I think that's right. We do need to look at ourselves and how we be generous. But how do we encourage generosity in fellow members of the community?
I think it's first listening with a compassionate heart to the stories that we have to share with each other. The most generous thing we can do is to give a listening ear to the other person, and we'll hear within the story opportunities, no matter how bitter that story may be. You can often listen and wait for the insight that will say, well, look, here is something that I can offer you. Here is something that you can offer back. And it's often simply creating that environment within the community of Christ that offers that generosity. I guess if I can reflect on a story that comes out of the church that I was involved in for the last 20 years or so. They ran a program called Open House. It began some 30 years ago as a community welcoming place for people who were lonely, who were shut in, and they could come here and they could begin to meet with people and begin to have some social contact. A lot of these people didn't see anyone from one week to the next. So they were brought in to Open House, often through a driving roster. A lot of them were referred from the local doctor's surgery. And you would watch over the weeks as they would sit, first of all, by themselves, all huddled up, but then as different people spoke to them, listened to their story, encouraged them to engage over a game of Scrabble or, just a chat, then like a flower, that was all closed up, they would begin to open up. And eventually that flower would be so open that you'd be overcome by the aroma of the perfume, of the generosity that they were giving back. So it's engaging imaginatively, creatively, from your own spirit of generosity. Because it's there within all of us. Because if Christ is in us, the generosity is there also. Does that help at all? Okay. Happy to chat with people afterwards. Let's sing our last hymn. The last hymn I've chosen is a rather feisty one. It's...